you to bend. And now you claim to be part Sioux or Cherokee. But where were you when we came close to the end? When we had no voice, you never said a word. When we cried out to you, you never even heard. When our freedom was being denied, you never questioned why. When we needed help somehow, the well was always dry. So tell me, where were you when we needed you, our friend? Where were you when?
All right, can you hear us now?
Good morning. This is, sorry about that. We had a little microphone problem. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Paul Rowland, for the next hour, and my co-host, Jacqueline Keeler. Good morning, Jacqueline.
Good morning, Paul.
And that was a little difficult start there, but here we go. So we're going to be talking, first of all, that was Floyd Westerman with his Custer Died for Your Sins album, which came out in 1969, 50 years ago. And that was Where Were You When, which relates to what we're going to be talking about today, people pretending to be a Native American and dressing up as a Native American, making strange advertisements for Dior.
Yes, we're talking about Johnny Depp and his Dior ad. He's been the representative, I think, since 2014 of Dior's Sauvage perfume, or is it a cologne? Or I guess, and it's been around. It's a product that's been around for many decades. But he recently was brought on, and around the time that he played Tonto on the Lone Ranger in the Lone Ranger film, and also around the time that he was adopted by the Comanche tribe. And that sort of plays a role in this. His adoptive mother was LaDonna Harris, who is the founder of Americans for Indian Opportunity, a longtime Native organization that's worked to promote Native people and Native issues. She is a member of the Comanche tribe and the first Native woman to be the wife of a U.S. senator. However, in this case, her organization, Americans for Indian Opportunity, AIO, actually collaborated with this ad that has caused a huge backlash. And Dior has since pulled the ad because of the backlash and just how stereotypical the ad was. And
Let's talk about this ad first of all. Have you actually been able to see the entire ad? Has anybody been able to see?
There is I posted on our Facebook page our KBOO webpage for Wednesday Talk Radio. I posted a link to the Vimeo, which is a director's cut, and so there's a Vimeo link there where you can view the ad. There.
Okay, because I haven't gotten to see it. So describe this ad.
It's very, it's pretty problematic.
Your mic isn't working still.
My mic?
Yours is working.
Okay, yeah, so it's pretty problematic. The apparently my co-host mic is still not working, so hopefully we'll get that fixed. The ad is features Johnny Depp, being very soulful looking, and then also has they did hire actual Native people, a Native dancer to dance, and then also a Native actress from Canada to sort of be his love interest, I guess. But the whole thing with coyotes and all this stuff, and he actually invokes a Navajo sacred story about the holy people. And so the script, actually was sent a copy of the script, which was pretty bad. I have to say, I am Native American. I am a citizen of the Navajo Nation. I was born for my clan is Kia'ani Nishle, and my father is Yankton Sioux. And so, but I know that for Navajo people, the holy people are incredibly sacred, and using them in a commercial venture like this, it's just rather extraordinary to me that anyone would approve that, any Native person. Or I saw there were two Navajos on the AIO board. I was totally shocked that they signed off on this. In the Navajo way, these stories are very, these stories about the holy people and what they did in the creation of this world and in confronting different things, you know, that is used in our healing ceremonies. We actually use those to heal ourselves with. So when you go into a Navajo ceremony and you have a hatatli, you know, a singer who sings these songs that were given to us by the holy people to put you back into hojo, honestly, to that, you know, harmony with everything around you, that is all invoking the activities and stories that we have of the holy people. So for him to take that and put it into a commercial venture to sell perfume for Dior, right, in a perfume called Sauvage. And I know that there is some question whether Sauvage is the same thing as savage in English. You know, there's some people quoting that in French it means like wild and, you know, all that kind of stuff, or the wood, living in the woods. But, you know, I have...
Well, savage has those meanings as well. I mean, if you go back to the etymology, it's all...
Yeah. So they're trying to say in French it's not quite as bad. But, you know, I have a mentor. Her name is Alanisa Bomsawin, and she's a Abenaki Indian from Quebec, French Quebec, French-speaking Quebec. And she grew up in a French-speaking community, and, well, Quebecois, and there, they definitely use that term against her in a negative way. She told me that she's a documentary filmmaker in Canada working for the Canadian Film Board. She's done many amazing films. I really suggest looking up her films, Alanisa Bomsawin. But she said that when she was growing up there, the school teacher used to grab her by her arm and pinch her really hard and call her Sauvage. And the white French Quebecois boys, they would, when she left school, she'd have to run home because they would beat her up. She ended up leaving the community as a teenager and going to live with her aunt in Florida because the violence was so bad. And in fact, after a while, those same boys that used to try to beat her up wanted to date her. So there's this element of the issue of violence against Native women and violence against Native people. And then, of course, we have the issue, the missing and murdered Indigenous women issue, the issue of the high rates of domestic violence Native women face, the need to pass legislation like VAWA that will, you know, ensure greater, legal measures for to protect Native women. Of course, Johnny Depp has these domestic violence charges against him by his ex-wife, Amanda Heard. That AIO is still working with him at this point. It's pretty extraordinary.
There's so many levels of this. Now that my mic's working, we've gotten over all our technical difficulties. There's the character Johnny Depp, who, as you say, he played Tonto, which was, you know, itself controversial for many different reasons. Just the whole idea of Tonto himself, you know, his relationship to the Lone Ranger, its role in sort of, you know, the American mythology, you know, many layers there. Johnny Depp, didn't he also play a Native American character earlier in another film? Or was that a film in which there was a Native American character?
Oh, I think you're thinking of, is it Dead Man?
Dead Man Walking.
The John Rich one. He played actually a white man, but there was a Native character the actor. he's a really great actor. And Jim Jarmusch was a very interesting film. And, but he played a character named William Blake, after the poet William Blake. I wrote actually an article about the Tonto film, the Lone Ranger film, back in 2013 for Indian Country Today. And I called it Depp, Paula Deen, and the Washington R Word, because all those issues were happening at the same time. I don't remember, Paula Deen had said the N word. And then Johnny Depp, basically he was doing red face, right? And he used the paintings of a white man. This white artist who does these sort of romantic paintings of Native people. He used that as the basis of his costume, and he has like this dead bird on his head, and it's nothing that Native people actually wore, but to him that seems authentic. You know, there's this nature which, you know, when you are, that's why I wanted to know, like, can pretendians, like, can we rehabilitate them? Can we make them actually part of the solution and not part of the problem? Because, you know, the very act of pretending to be Indian is an expression of colonialism. It's an expression of of the genocide, because of course there's no one around to question them because they killed all the actual Indians. You know, that's an expression of this desire to wash themselves of the sins of genocide and colonialism, to become us. And so it's not benign, you know. And so they're so hungry to be us. And so when we give them an entree like this, like adopt them, or, you know, cater to them to get access to whatever power they have in the world, you know, and you have to wonder at which point, which way will it go? You know, can you control that impulse? And I would say in this case, they didn't. You know, they allowed him, they signed off on him doing these things. And some of the actors and the performers who were, well, one of the actress who was in the advertisement, she actually did a long Instagram post. Her name is Tanaya Beatty. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but she's from Canada. She's First Nations, and she was hired to do this role, and she actually claims in the Instagram post that she did it to, she knew that it was, that Sauvage was, a horrible, slur, right? But she chose to do it anyway because she figured they would hire someone, and she needed the money. She's suffering from medical issues, and she basically felt that she could then be part of the conversation afterwards because she knew there would be a lot of backlash against it. So I don't know. When I did tweet and critique this issue, but I didn't go after the people who were in it. I feel like those people, I have a lot of sympathy for actors and performers, and I know that they don't have a lot of power over the situation, but to me that meant that we need to actually be an advocate for them. And I lay it at the feet of Johnny Depp, of Dior, and of AIO, because they were actually in a position to make it better.
Well, let's talk about them a little more. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm the regular weekly host, Paul Rowland. This is I'm speaking with Jacqueline Keeler, who's the second Wednesday co-host. And we're talking about cultural appropriation and this, now it's not an ad because they withdrew it, but it was going to be an ad for Dior, a cologne ad for their scent, Sauvage. And anyway, it's created a furor. And, you know, you'd think at this point that people would know. You'd think that people would know better. I mean, this has happened time and time again. It's kind of strange. But anyway, okay, so Americans for Indian Opportunity released a statement saying that our aim was hopefully that the controversy would do exactly what is done on social media and raise people's awareness. Do you buy that? That they actually knew that they chose to get involved because they knew this would happen?
Yeah, that was the initial response from Laura Harris, who is the daughter of LaDonna Harris, the founder of AIO. But later, AIO issued a statement simply straight up apologizing for doing it. So, but yeah, that was their initial reaction to try to spin it. But, you know, they were actually told beforehand.
That seems a little disingenuous, too.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a native rap artist, Superman, and he's performed here in Portland before. He performs in his regalia, his kind of a grass dance regalia. He's, I think, Crow from Montana. And you can check out his Twitter handle at Superman Hip Hop. And he posted a response like, there's a few who thought it was me in the Dior ad. This is the email I sent back to Native consultants months ago. Should have ended before it began. And so this was actually on May 1st. He puts an arrow right at the thing, and he explains why he doesn't want to be a part of it. After hearing that it was for the fragrance Sauvage, it made me think a little more in depth about how the world views us Native people. I've come to the conclusion for myself that no matter how beautiful the imagery may be on this project or what the vision is of the non-Native producers, that beauty will be perpetuating a term that is obviously closely associated with the stereotypical term savage all around the world, and I will feel I will be doing an injustice by giving a misrepresentation of the people's best interests. So I must respectfully decline the offer. So, you know, I imagine the Native consultants he's talking about are AIO, And so in May, they were given a really quite good sort of analysis of the situation, but they ignored it and they proceeded to endorse and to participate in this project.
And of course, this is a call-in show and your participation is welcome. For questions and comments, please call 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. The lines are open. So, of course, this is something you've been talking about a lot, and we've talked about on the show cultural appropriation from the R word, the Washington football team, to Chief Yahoo, to, of course, the Portland Winterhawks team, which also uses a similar logo. And this is just so deep in our culture and just seems to keep bubbling to the surface, notwithstanding all the efforts. Yet there is, maybe there is progress in that the kind of reactions we see now are much stronger. I mean, do you see...
Well,
things
I think,
shifting at all?
Social media really gives Native people a chance to respond and to explain our perspectives, to an audience and to gain understanding. And it is true, this has created an opportunity, but I really question, I have issues with a lot of the Native leadership who tend to sort of support famous white people who are pretending to be Indian, right? And I've critiqued that. I think it's sort of a pitiful position to put yourself into, to be power adjacent to someone. And I was telling you before, I don't know that it's really helped us in the past being associated with movie stars. I think...
You mentioned Marlon Brando. That was probably the most famous early example in it was an Academy Award, right, in the
73 or 70. Yeah, it was...
Right after Wounded Knee. Right,
yeah,
the time Wounded
Sachin
Knee.
Littlefeather. She's of Apache descent, I believe. And she was sent up there to claim to reject the Academy Award that he had gotten for... Was it for The Godfather?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, until Hollywood would increase its representation of Native people in its films, of course, which hasn't happened. I mean, how many years has that been?
And it was a powerful speech.
It was a powerful speech, but I think that in the end, nothing came of it. We still don't have representation in Hollywood. In the end, a lot of times when that's presented, it's presented as sort of more of a in the line of that, do celebrities have the right to take part in these important conversations, or are our issues reduced to the level of judging that celebrity, right? If that celebrity has things happen, then our issues get sort of sidelined by the personality involved, right?
And has Johnny Depp ever, cutting back to the present, has he ever claim to be a friend of the Indian? Has he actually done anything concrete that
So he's claimed to be, I think, Cherokee, and his family is from Kentucky. I think that they trace their ancestry to sort of a tri-racial group took to the Western Virginia and farther to escape the more stringent racial laws in Virginia, I know that DNA testing, I think they're called Melungeans. That's who they're called. They're a Melungean family, the Depps. There's a number of them. Also Hanks, Tom Hanks, and that's the Hanks family are also Melungeans. I think Lincoln's mother was a Hank as well. DNA testing was done on that community, and there was no Native DNA was found. They are of West African.
His eighth great grandmother was Elizabeth Key, the first African American woman in the American colonies to sue for her freedom from slavery. And when I made a
kind of facetious comment to you earlier that, like, if he's looking for authenticity, what does he need more than, I mean, that's pretty kick-ass,
you know? Yeah,
I would
be really, I mean, it'd be great if he was leading with that, you know, his actual ancestry and the things that they've done to make this country better. So they are found to be of West, they also claim to call themselves Portuguese, but they actually have mostly Northern European ancestry. There was no Portuguese found. So they think that basically that these were descendants of a Portuguese slaving ship that crashed on the shore of Virginia, and the people escaped. The people held in bondage on the ship escaped and then intermarried and headed out to the hills to get away from those horrible racist laws. And that's a big part of our history of the United States. It's an amazing, it's a horrible history, but it should be given more, he should be talking about it. It's a really important thing, and he could actually have an impact on changing people's perspectives of our history. And so, I think, a lot of times people want to go for the Indian thing, I think Dr. Gates, Skippy Gates, he has that show on PBS that kind of they traces your family.
Oh, yeah,
tree.
yeah, Henry.
Yeah, Henry Louis Gates. And he wrote an article in The Root about how all Black people want to have this Native ancestor, but so few of the Black celebrities he's had on his show have tested with any Native DNA, and actually the window in which that could happen, he claims, he's speaking to a lot of historians, was actually quite narrow. So he explains that a lot of it is because of the interracial mixing between Europeans and Africans, that it can create a look that approximates Native people. And you see that now with the actress, is her name Julia Jones. She's her father's African American, her mother's English, and now she's been trying to claim to be Native with no proof, and she now claims to be the first Native woman to be in a Star Wars franchise.
Well, we'll get back to that, but we do have a caller who's been waiting patiently for a few minutes. So if you're still there, Brian, please join the conversation. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to thank you for this because some of these conversations like this are kind of helpful in understanding this like appropriation thing, and I kind of have an interesting little background in it. Back in the 80s when I was in college, I found out interesting way that it looked like that I had Cherokee in my background, and we had never known anything about that, and I thought it was pretty cool, because my sister was one of the first people I ever know. She's older, and she much quite a bit older than me, and she had studied and really gotten into Native American rights and issues, and kind of educated me a little bit when I was younger, kind of got me away from the cowboys and Indians mentality that I had originally grown up with. And, I'm really thankful for that. And then when I found out that, there's a good possibility we have Cherokee, I thought that was really cool. And I couldn't believe how many people, when I'd tell them that, they would say, hey, maybe you can get in on some, some of the money and some of the benefits of being Native. And back then, I didn't really have words for it. Like, that's what's helpful now, hearing these conversations, is having words and being able to kind of understand what I was feeling. But it just felt so weird, like, even though I had blood, maybe, I didn't grow up Native American. I didn't grow up, in any way that way. And it just felt weird to me that they would suggest that I should take that on. And I couldn't put words to it, but now I'm getting better at it. Even last year, we had a friend of a friend that visited from Arizona. And they were talking about how their late husband had been involved in a group down in Arizona that had, did some tourist kind of things. And they were all white guys that would do these Native ceremonies and really promote Native things, but there was no Natives involved. And I was, even then I didn't have words, but I was like, that's weird. I don't know why that feels so. On one hand, it sounded like they were really honoring the Native culture. On the other hand, it just seemed funny. And now I kind of have the word appropriation. So I think I'm starting to zero in on what felt funny about it. But anyway, thank you for the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian. Yeah. I think you're exactly right there. It is sort of shocking to me that their first reaction of other Americans to Native identity is that they can somehow profit off of it. And that's very telling, because the actual, if you look at the actual data and statistics regarding Native lives, you can see that profiting is really not a main thing. We rank lowest in every sort of statistic you can think of, from income to lifespan to murder, highest in things like murder rates and stuff, and rape. And it's we're not profiting off of being Native. That's not a thing. You know, I think... I think sometimes this actually, when we look at the impulse of colonists, and I call American citizens colonists, and the reason is that that they are part of a state that occupies the indigenous nations of this continent, and so it is an act of colonization. But a colony and a colonist has a very different origin story than an indigenous people do. And I write about this a lot. And, you know, of course, we all know the definition of a colony and a colonist is, you know, it's an endeavor which goes to the lands of other people and strives to profit off of it, you know, and send that wealth back to the ruling class where it came from, right? It's 1%. This is the whole function of a colony. I look to the origins, like in Virginia. You know, I think that Jamestown and the race based sort of a situation that grew out of Virginia really is the template of America. And Virginia began with a profit motive by the Virginia Company of Adventures in London, and so there's always been this sort of profit motive, and so that of course is expressed in how they relate to even the prospect of being Native. But for Native people, our origin stories, and I use a definition given by my grandmother's cousin, Vine Deloria Jr., who was a Native historian from Standing Rock, and he gives a definition that a people, and we call ourselves a people in our language, like in my mother's, in the Navajo people call themselves Diné, which means the people, and a people have their origin story in the meeting with a sacred being who is a manifestation of the land itself. And in that meeting, we're given original instructions and how we're going to live on that place and that land. And that land is a specific area. Like for the Navajo people, it's the Diné Ta. It's between the four sacred mountains and the four sacred rivers. And for my father's people, it was the meeting with the white buffalo calf woman, who is a manifestation of the Great Plains and the Buffalo Nation, and our relationship laid out the rules to our relationship to those people in that place. And so there are rules, and the rule is not just profitability and personal liberty, there are rules in which we have to be a people. And so, my Lala used to say, before we met the white buffalo calf woman, we were not Dakota. After we met her, we were. Before that, we were something else. And so I think that is really, to me, that gets to the heart of really why pretendians often go off the rails in this. It's very difficult to invest in the relationship with the pretendian, because at the heart it is so colonialistic.
Yeah, I also wanted to mention, those are great points. I also wanted to mention an article that I just read last month. We get a magazine called The Sun, and actually it's this month's version of The Sun. August 2019 has a really in-depth interview with Mark Levitin. With Paul Chat Smith.
Oh, yes, yeah. He's a curator at the National Museum.
It's called Our Fellow Americans, and it's a really, boy, it really opened my eyes to a lot of the issues and the concepts that have been running around, you know, about Native American relationships.
I'll check it out. I just saw him when I was there in D.C. in January. He's a curator. He's Native American. He's a curator at the National Museum of the American Indian.
Exactly. Yeah, really, I'd recommend it to anyone. Our Fellow Americans interview in the August Sun magazine.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
And we've got another caller. If you just hold on a second, Mark, I just want to mention how, you know, obviously, speaking of Vine Deloria, this album that we played a cut from to start the show off, Custer Died for Your Sins, is obviously taken from a Vine Deloria, the book by that same name by Vine DeLorean. He actually does the liner notes. I just can't recommend this album enough. It's really hard to find. It came out 50 years ago in 1969. But anyway, that book, those books of Vine DeLorean had such an influence on me. The whole idea of that he draws between sort of Western culture being this sort of time-based, this sort of idea of, you know, this progressivism, whereas native cultures being place or space-based, this whole spatial dimension that he talks about was just really turned my thinking around a lot. It really helped reorient me, I guess, and may have had something to do with me making my attempt to go to my father's homeland in Italy, which did really give me a unique sense, you know, of my own, of like, I don't know, it was in a sense a kind of a failure in the end because I didn't stick. But I don't know, I was just there. I just want to mention this as something I want to mention when I first got back. But I was there at my family's, you know, hundreds of year old place. In this little valley with really deep, its own deep tradition, historical traditions. But I did these hikes up behind it. And there's all these trails, these old trails that are connected, these houses that basically you can't see anymore because it's all been regrown and they've all fallen down above a certain height. But you get inside there and it's like this whole other world, this whole almost a cosmos. And it gave me a sense for, you know, just a glimmer of how a different society, you know, a European society actually did exist at one time. It still kind of exists. It's been really changed. But anyway, I just want to throw that out there. I had my own like brief connection to some sort of indigeneity, just a vague glimmer. But I think it was sort of presaged by reading Vine DeLorean and other native authors who really imparted to me some sort of sense of what that kind of that spatial continuity has is really very different, because our continuity is a continuity of profiteering and colonization. Anyway, just wanted to mention that. And this article that we kind of been talking about, I didn't mention it's called Dep Sauvage, The Scent of Appropriation, and
it's
it was
on,
just
on, our, it's on the webpage for the
on
show.
The webpage for the show, and it was by a woman that we don't know much about, named Allie, but it's really worth reading. And we do have a caller, Mark. Are you still with us? Hello, Mark. Oh, our engineers.
Years.
Uh huh.
Old friend of yours, Paul. Mark, I have a little. I want to defend Johnny Depp. Okay, because I think his intentions are pure, and I don't think he's anything that he did, except for the fact that it was for money and for monetary reasons and the marketing and all that part. But I think when it's very difficult for a white person, let's say like for me example, to even explore into that into the genre of even musically of the Native Americans, because I'm afraid if I get on stage and start singing Witchy Taito, I might get shot, you know, because it just doesn't look politically correct.
Yeah.
You know, and so the question I have is, sympathetic people are almost, you almost hurt people's feelings that are sympathetic to your causes by excluding, people from participating in part of the culture, which is fantastic culture. Love it.
Yeah,
love it.
I think, Johnny Depp did issue yesterday a statement in defense of the campaign. He says that there was never, and how could there be, or how would there be any dishonorable intent? The film was made with a great respect for the indigenous people, not just of North America, but all the world. Uh-huh. And he says, it's a pity that people jumped the gun and made these objections. However, their objections are their objections. And I have to say that I did tweet and I did share this on social media. And the response of Native people was quite angry because, you know, they definitely felt like that was a not a real authentic apology. And so, you know, the issue, and actually I was, there is a native artist here in town, a musician, her band is called Black Belt Eagle yeah. Scout. And I just actually heard her on OPB the other day on State of Wonder, I think, or was it? But she was talking about how in her audiences she often prefer she doesn't like having white men in her audience, right? And that she prefers to have an audience of brown people. And you know, I think that can be sound very shocking, right? And I don't feel this way myself, but this is her perspective as a Native woman. She's Swinomish from Washington State. And she explained why she felt that way. And I thought it was a really good explanation. And I think that, you know, you may feel excluded as a white person, but there is the other side of that, which is the intense fear and genocide and violence and active terrorism that has been done in the name of whiteness to brown and black people in this country, and that is still a huge factor in our day-to-day lives. And so you may not feel it, but you may not realize what was done on your behalf and what continues to be done, acts of violence against brown and black people in this country, but it is happening. And so I think that is, you know, you may feel sad that you're being excluded from doing certain things, but it's really not on the same level of the level of violence being done in your name. Right. And so so I think that's the flip side of it is the trauma that comes out of this system, this history. And it is, and it's not history. It's still reality. I mean, look at, you know, the Black Lives Matters movement. You know, look at what's going on with, you know, the missing murdered Indigenous women's movement. The violence is still actively happening. And of course, the election of Trump, which is an act of violence as well, done in the name of white supremacy. And voted for and by the majority of white people in this country. So it's, you know, of course, people would like to come to the point where colonization and things that come from colonization are no longer a factor in our relationship with each other, but we are just simply not there yet.
Mark, could I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Did you actually see any part of this ad, the Dior ad?
I'm sorry, I did not.
Oh, so you don't actually know what we're talking about.
From just from what I heard you describing, yeah, I know that was kind of dumb of me to even make a comment, but I just want to defend the whole idea. I'm not feeling excluded. I refuse to be excluded. That's not going to happen. And I just want to know how I need to, you know, I am going to sing these songs because I love Jim Pepper and all that he did. And all the music that goes with it, especially the drums.
Well, nobody yeah. minds if you sing it in the shower or something. Are you talking about, like, singing it on stage?
Not performing in any general, like we used to do.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that there was an issue with performing Jim Pepper songs because he's singing.
It's not an issue unless I make it one.
I've never heard that.
As much as I love him, and I know three of his songs, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the same thing as doing things that are actually sacred. I mean, the stories The stories about the holy people, that's at a totally different level than the performance of an artist.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, Jim Pepper was doing what kind of music was he playing?
Jazz
music, which is itself a cross-cultural, although, you know, thing and a modern thing. But when we were talking about the invocation of our creation stories and our sacred things, that's not acceptable. I mean, you have to understand what it's like to grow up with traditional Navajo grandparents and
you're talking, Robbie Robertson.
I mean, his work is not sacred either. It's you know, it's
this musical.
Yeah, it's musical. I mean, the sacred aspects are completely different.
It's not sacred, but it is bringing across cultural lines parts of the music that help.
Okay, thanks for calling, Mark. We appreciate it for engaging the conversation.
Oh,
looks
good.
Like let's go right to another caller. We got Robin. Go ahead, you're on the air, Robin.
Hi, Jacqueline. It's Robin. and
Hi.
You know who I am. I'm wondering if you wanted to mention anything about the prior campaign that Dior did using the Navajo holy myth.
Yeah, actually, I did reference that a bit. It was so I was getting into talking a little bit about like what it's like to grow up with traditional Navajo grandparents,
right?
And so I think that people don't realize the extent to which this, which what sacred means, even because there really is nothing quite like it in Western culture, and so a lot in some traditional cultures in the Americas, some stories cannot be told. They can only be told during certain times of the year and only in certain contexts. And like a lot of the Navajo creation stories can only be told in winter. And so it's and there are reasons for that. But also a lot of the symbology that go along, like the sand painting. I guess I'm just going to tell a story to explain it because that's probably the easiest way to do it. When I was a child, when I was about 7 years old, my aunt and two of my aunts, they turned my grandparents' home on the reservation, on the Navajo Nation, into a studio. They turned the living room into a studio, the front room. And they were making sand paintings for sale to tourists, right? So they were on these sort of boards. They would glue sand, colored sand, and make these images and sell. I think people have seen those before. And I was a kid, and I was really interested in what they were doing. And so they gave me little bits of the what is that board called? That sort of a and then also some sand and glue, and they let me go at it. And I was making these symbols that are used in ceremonies. Really, these sand, we make these sand paintings, Navajo sand paintings, and the medicine men and folks, they do drawings of the holy people and of from stories and images, and they set the patient on the sand painting to heal them, right? And so I was copying what I was seeing them doing, and my grandparents came home. And my grandparents were traditional Navajos. They didn't speak English. They were not Christian. They were traditional Navajos. And so I, and so they came in. My grandmother wore long skirts. She had her hair in a bun. And it's, yes, you know, she wore, they both wore turquoise jewelry. You know, my grandfather was an Indian cowboy. My grandmother was a rug weaver. And so they came in, and they were totally upset that I was doing this. They just were like, you can't let her, in Navajo, they're like, you can't let her do this. Because the idea is that children, in Navajo, children are like this, they are very open. Like, they have, like, the way they describe it is like that they're very attractive to the spirits because they shine. And there's like this shining light that comes out of them, right? And it attracts bad spirits and good spirits, and they can also be deeply affected by doing things the wrong way, like bad medicine, and so basically that's, my grandparents were like, if she's not making these symbols the right way, it can go back on her. Do you mean? And so, and this is the power that is viewed in the symbols and the stories related to the holy people. Right. And so I was really upset because I was like, I was really enjoying it. And I felt like it was unfair. And I was kind of shocked at just how upset my grandparents were. But this is the thing, is like, this is what you learn being part of a Native family. You learn a different culture. You learn a different way of seeing the world. And sometimes a lot of it is telling you, no, you can't do that. Right. And I have to say that as someone, you know, raised by, you know, impacted by my grandparents' point of view, perspective, there's no way I would ever okay the script that I saw for this campaign, because I know what they taught me. And you know, when you have a traditional culture that's intact, a lot of it is them telling you no, no, no. And it's very annoying, right? I mean, when you have a culture that's a few generations back, you can pick and choose what you like from it and use that. But that's not the case when the culture is actually there, is embed, you know, is telling you no. And so what's forbidden, what's taboo. And so I could not do that. I could never have okayed this script. And I don't know how these other people did it. You know, how a Comanche woman felt like she was empowered to okay this.
Right. Just to be clear, though, this is the campaign before this one. in 2018 where they did the thing with the Navajo myth, which was done before this and didn't receive much attention.
Yeah, it definitely didn't. I think it just took someone noticing it and putting it out there, and yeah.
Did the Navajo Nation respond?
I haven't seen a response to the Navajo Nation. That'd be really interesting to get a response, particularly from the, there actually is a Medicine Man's Association on the Navajo Nation, which could formally respond.
Yeah, you know, this whole issue of consultation, you know, it has sort of in fits and starts. You know, you do hear of now of some, you know, culturally appropriate consultation happening from various communities in different, you know, cultural products, films, but it certainly, you know, there's certainly no council, you know, Native American council, you know, that's always being consulted by Hollywood. It's, you know, maybe if a particular director is him or herself enlightened, they might do it. But other than that,
yeah, I think that's, you know, that, well, there was actually a book that came out last year called The Lightning Thief, which was written by a woman. Roan Horse, and she was she's an Navajo in-law, she's not Navajo herself, and she wrote a book using Navajo holy people and such, and I ended up going to I was invited to speak at a Navajo conference on literature, the Diné Emerging Writers Conference, and a bunch of the Navajo writers there were very upset because of what she was doing with our sacred stories, and of course she won a Hugo Award. She got the support from George R. R. Martin, you know, from Game of Thrones, and everything. And I think that was something I really had to explain to some other Native folks, is that these stories, they're not, you know, when you actually change them, you could be doing bad medicine on yourself. And it's serious. It's considered serious. And it's also that way with other tribes in the Southwest as well. I know the Taos Pueblo actually banished a writer. He was a professor of creative writing at the University of New Mexico, who wrote a little bit about their deer dance, just not too much. And he's Pueblo as well, and an in-law, right? His wife is Taos Pueblo, and they banished him for life for that. So the sharing of these sacred things is, I know there are some folks, like some Lakota folks, who go out and share our ceremonies with all sorts of people, but a lot of tribes are not like that.
Robin, you still there? Did you want to make any last comment?
No. I'm glad that you said that a Navajo medicine man should respond to it, because it's pretty shocking, actually.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things is, like, I think that woman who did the lightning thief, she says, well, my in-laws said it was okay, right? If someone finds an Indian to okay it. But I think it has to be a much larger thing, like an actual, like, organization. Or, I mean, even with these traditional stories, they belong to all the Navajo people. And so you would actually have to seek consensus with everyone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks for calling, Robin.
Thank you.
And we have a couple minutes. 503-231-8187, just a couple minutes left. I want to get a quick last question. So summing up, we're talking about this latest outrage, this Dior ad, which appropriated various elements of Native culture in a kind of a strange mishmash, which I guess is a sort of is American culture itself, is sort of this just total cultural appropriation from anywhere and mixing it all up and making a profit off of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had like coyotes in there, which in the Navajo way is really not, it's kind of taboo because they have all kinds of ideas. It's so hard because, I mean, I belong to two tribes, you know, two different traditions, and they're not the same. I mean, you can't really mix and match. I mean, When I did a ceremony for my dad's tribe, which is called the Sundance, you know, my Navajo grandparents were appalled, because in the Navajo way, you don't cut the skin; it's forbidden. and they and in Navajo they call that Sundance. They call it the ceremony where they rip the flesh out. Do you mean? And so the two cultures, you know, they're both indigenous cultures, the Dakota Lakota culture and the Navajo Diné culture, but they are not the same, and they don't even agree on certain things. Like in my dad's tribe, they go up on a hill and they wait for they look for a vision for a spirit to come and talk to them, right? In the Navajo way, that would be completely forbidden. You would never do that because you wouldn't know who is speaking to you. You could be talking to somewhat a really bad spirit and you wouldn't know it. And so in Navajo way, everything was given to us by the holy people when we emerge from the previous world, and that's how we have our ceremony. So it's completely different.
We have a note that says Lin Neha. Is that the caller?
Okay.
No? Yes? Yeah. Go ahead.
Hi. Sorry, it's Linnea.
Go ahead.
But I just had a quick, I think this is probably a larger discussion within this that I noticed from the ad, which I watched today. Based on your discussion, I had never seen it, and so I went and watched it. And I think for me, something I'm seeing as a white person is a co-opting of religion in general from other cultures due to the fact that ours is failing us. You have a failure of the Catholic Church. You have a lot of people that are looking at our religious traditions and they just don't, they can't relate to it anymore. We've kind of lost a lot of respect for it, I think. And so we're going out and we're stealing and colonizing other religious traditions, or trying to. And that's the thing that I got from that ad, was it was like, what am I looking for? What am I looking for? And I see that a lot amongst a lot of younger, not always, but I think a lot of people reaching out trying to find something else, and they're not realizing how detrimental that is, and that they just don't, it's not their tradition. It's not their culture.
Yeah, well, I think that I would draw that back to the issue of the origin stories of each people. You know, when your origin story is a colonial one and it's based on a profit motive, it's incredibly unsatisfactory. And you know, Christianity was used as a way to prop up the colonization. And even that origin story is fairly new for Europeans. I mean, if you look at the 18th century and in even the 17th century, the removals from the land and the clearing of the commons on the British Isles and how they then reformed themselves from a village based rural sort of identity to a commercial one, and the removal of people, and so it's I think that that's the core of it, and I would go back to again the definition of a real people, which would be that connection to to the land in a meaningful way.
Well, with that, we got to end the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, callers, and Jacqueline, and we'll talk at you in a month.
Okay.
This is Paul Roland with Wednesday Talk Radio. Thanks, Jacqueline.
Sure.